You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Name Three Songs. I'm Sarah Fagan.
I'm Jenna Money. And this is a podcast where we challenge sexism in the music industry and empower fangirls. Because let's be honest, fangirls knew about that band way before you did.
And now it's time to get an artist's perspective, because Name Three Songs wouldn't be here without the music.
And today, we have a very special guest for y'all, and one that has actually been requested by some of our listeners. So we're very excited to be bringing this episode to you.
I know, today is really exciting and is a more positive journey on the Name Three Song podcast, because today's guest has luckily surrounded themselves with people that really believe in them and believe in her music career and believe in what she's doing for her community and just everything in general. So it's really exciting to get to talk to somebody who hasn't had to face as many of the same issues with the music industry as most people have had to deal with that we talk to. So Jenna, would you like to introduce everybody to today's guest?
Today we are joined by Zolita, who is an LA-based artist. She grew up in California. She went to NYU for college and she studied film. So she brings a lot of her film perspective to her music and to her music videos. Her first single, Explosions, came out in 2015, and it was about falling in love with her high school best friend. And the song went viral. And at this current moment, it has 20 million views on YouTube. So since then, Zolita has been working away, releasing multiple songs and EPs. And more recently, she's been growing her TikTok account a lot, so you may have come across her over there on TikTok.
Yeah, I know that for me, at least, I discovered her from her TikTok because she was promoting very heavily her very awesome song called Somebody I Fucked Once, which is an incredible, very like sapphic love story song, which led to this really awesome trilogy of songs and music videos that kind of gave women loving women relationships the Y2K rom-com romance movie that they could have only dreamed of, because as we all know, gay characters were always just like side funny bits if they ever existed in a movie during that time frame. So it's really awesome that she's been able to use her cinematic experience, her filmmaking experience from university, to create this thing that brought so many people together and also led her to signing on to a music distribution deal that really works with her. And so she's been able to surround herself not only with friends and teammates that she's picked herself, but also with a label that really understands her vision and what she's doing. And so it's really cool and exciting that we're going to get to talk with her today about a lot of topics that we talk about, from tabloid culture to record deals to like the queer experience in music and just like what TikTok is doing in the world of music today.
That's right. We got a packed episode for you guys, and Zolita has an awesome perspective. So without further ado, hi Zolita. Thank you for joining us today. We're so excited to have you.
Hello. So excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we are going to jump right into this conversation, and we have a big question to start off with. So you grew up throughout tabloid culture, seeing people like Britney Spears torn apart in tabloid headlines. And at this time in the early 2000s, like being gay or being lesbian was kind of like hush hush and often referred to like in a negative light. And a lot of times there were just like rumors started about artists being gay. And a lot of this was like used to diminish their work or just like in general cause gossip for no good reason. So do you ever like remember seeing this growing up, and do you feel like it affected you in any way with your feelings towards coming out, or do you feel like maybe this pushed you to want to be even more who you are and be that representation that you didn't see growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely affected the way that I viewed queer people growing up and the way that I perceived like being a lesbian, like how you would be treated by the media. And how you would be treated by society at large. I was just reading, actually, do you guys know the book by Jill Gutowitz called Girls Can Kiss Now?
That sounds
It's really good. It's a lot of essays just on like queerness and pop culture. But I was reading an essay in there, and they were talking about like in Bring It On. This isn't tabloid culture, but it's kind of a similar thing. In Bring It On, Missy, that cheerleader, comes in and auditions, and she does like crazy gymnastics, and she's so cool, and she's hot, and she has the chain. So you're like kind of like, okay, yes, like she's so cool and hot. And then the head person auditioning her is like, yeah, but she's like a dyke. Like, she looks like a dyke.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay, like, all those things are bad. Like, she's bad.
Yeah.
It's just the way that, like, already from, you know, yeah, just in so much, yeah, tabloid culture and in movies and TV, just the way that queer people were spoken about definitely has such a huge imprint on you growing up. And definitely was, like, made it harder. But, of course, made me, once I, like, accepted my sexuality, made me, you know, want to embrace it even more and, like, be kind of that person for young people.
Definitely, because I feel like a lot of us grew up in that time where we were having literal, like, PSAs with, like, Hillary Duff being like, when you say gay, do you know what that means?
Yeah.
And it always comes.
My favorite things are the, like, all of the, I feel like there's been so many TikToks recently or, like, memes. It's like, remember when Hillary Duff, like, single-handedly ended homophobia?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was a weird time because there would be all those headlines where it's like, oh, like, so-and-so caught out with, like, potentially a female lover or whatever the case is, like,
yeah.
Especially when, like, Lindsay Lohan and Samantha Ronson were dating,
yeah.
And that was always,
yeah.
Like, it was always, like, gal pals, but them, it was, like, so clear it wasn't, so they had to run, like, an actual lesbian love story, and it was just so much, like, them trying to make it evil and bad, and I just remember growing up looking at that being like, oh, this is crazy, because even when they would write negatively about, like, heterosexual relationships, it was never that much of trying to make one of them seem kind of evil or like a Lothario in the same sort of way that they were doing with Samantha Ronson specifically.
Yeah, they, like, painted her to be so evil, and then also it's like, oh, Lindsay, it's like, you know, the narrative of, like, Lindsay Lohan is like a wild child, she's being crazy,
yeah.
And she's running off, you know. That was so wild. That definitely had a huge imprint on me, too. I was just talking to my girlfriend about that situation as well. She was like, I so vividly remember, like, looking at Samantha Ronson and Lindsay Lohan and, like, all of the tabloids being, this is gross and bad. And, like, her, you know, being like, yeah, this is gross and bad. Like, it's so easy to, you know, when you're young, like, that is just put upon you.
Yeah, of course, when we were all so impressionable. And, like, that's the thing is, like, we have so much, like, honestly, even just, like, homophobia, like, unlearning to do just because of, like, the culture we all grew up in. But so when did you feel like there was a switch where you were like, no, I'm comfortable with who I am and I want to be, like, loud and proud about who I am?
Ooh, it took me moving to New York. So I grew up in a small suburb outside of Los Angeles. So you would think it would be, like, super progressive, and it was in some ways, but it was like a school of 2,000 kids, and there's probably like one out lesbian and one out gay guy, and it was still like the word lesbian was definitely like used as a slur, like, against other girls. So yeah, I realized that I was gay towards like the end of high school. It took me a long time to figure it out, and once I did and like knew that I was, I already knew that I was going to NYU, and I was like, well, everyone's gay there, so I'm just gonna wait and like make it a little easier on myself.
Yeah.
And I think about, like, if I would have fallen for somebody, like, if I would have fallen for a girl in high school, I'm sure I would have ended up coming out in high school, but I didn't, so I was like, you know, I'm just gonna wait. And once I was in New York and just had, I think it took me, like, having a community of queer people around me that, like, were uplifting me as well and making me feel, like, comfortable to be myself and making it feel like, oh, this is, like, it's, like, awesome to be gay. So, like, it's inspiring, it's creative, it's like, it's such an incredible community to be part
yeah.
of. And I think once I had that community around me, uplifting me, it made me feel like really confident in my identity. And that, I think, was the switch for me of like, oh, I want to be really loud and proud about this. And I think it's an awesome part of myself and I want to share it with people.
I think that's really incredible, especially because when you started making your music, there weren't a lot of like out and proud artists, especially doing
yeah.
pop music, because it was just like such a no-no to do that. Because I mean, a lot of times labels will kind of be like, oh, if you come out and you're trying to like sell this specific type of music, people are gonna like turn their backs on you, people are not going to accept you for who you are. And I feel like there's been
yeah.
other artists that we've talked to, Sizzy Rocket we recently spoke with, and she spoke
yeah.
about that. And I mean, I feel like even like Lindsay Lohan, who was like both an actress and also like singing pop music, like I feel like that really changed her career once everybody realized like, oh, she's bi, like what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And like doing the whole like, oh, it's a phase sort of situation because it didn't fit within that box that she was supposed to belong in.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I'm super lucky in the way that I like was so removed from the music industry when I started making music, and like so removed from the label. Like I just signed this year. Like I was so, I've never had anybody like telling me what was right and like what I could and couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because I was coming up through film, and I like, I went, you know, I studied film at NYU, and was surrounded by just like so many crazy, like such creative out there queer creators. I never even like thought twice about putting myself out there as a queer artist and like, and making lesbian art, which, yeah, I feel really lucky, because I feel like if I was in LA and I was like kind of more like coming up through the music industry, I'm sure that would have been a different story, you know, and had more like executives or people at like labels or companies like telling me what to do. I'm sure it would have been totally different.
It's honestly really crazy to think about, like you just said, like if you hadn't gone to NYU, like how things would have played out differently. And just like also this is very much proof that like having the community around you, not just like support, but like actually being like with people who are part of like the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community is such a different experience, and I'm sure help formed even just the way you think or like the way you think or like approach your art.
Yeah. Oh my God. Community is literally everything. I'm at my music videos that I make, I've like pretty much kept on the same, like I have my core crew of queer creators and like best friends that I've been making them with for 8 years.
That's honestly amazing.
Yeah. It's so awesome. Cause it's like, it's fun to all come up together, and it's fun to like all know each other so well and all be like, have this shared vision together. But yeah, sometimes I'm like, damn, I like look around and like, I live in a little bit of a bubble, because I have probably like 95% of my friends are in the community. So sometimes I'm like, when you're out of the community then, you know, and you're in like normal real life, yeah. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
damn, I'm like out of the bubble. Yeah,
definitely.
But I like it in the bubble. It's fun in here.
Well, it can be like so jarring, because I feel like there definitely are certain sectors of friendship groups or even like neighborhoods or whatever the case is, where you can kind of go into this kind of positive reaction loop where everybody has the same views and all that sort of thing. And then when you get rudely awakened by people who don't exist within that world, it's so weird, because you're just like, wait, what do you mean? Like everybody doesn't know about like all these artists or all these people that are making positive moves forward, when like everybody you hang out with is aware of that.
Totally. I feel like TikTok even like continues that cycle, right? Because your algorithm becomes like that, you know, the only the things that you want to see. So it's like, you're like, wait, this didn't come up in your for you page? What? Like, so confusing.
I mean, all we have to do is look at the Supreme Court for that bubble to burst real quick.
Oh, it's so scary.
Yeah, the world is a mess right now, which is why we try and have these conversations openly, to just kind of remind people that, like, they're not alone. So, like, we have people to fight with, and, like, there's a reason to fight, because there are so many people like yourself and, like, so many artists who are coming up right now who are being progressive and, like, showing that it's okay to be yourself, and, like, you don't have to... Like, I mean, you have to worry about the Supreme Court, but at the same time, like, the generations that are coming after us, I feel like, have a lot more access to things than we did to kind of, like, educate themselves.
God. Definitely. Yeah, no, and it's going to continue to be more important than ever that artists are, like, are speaking their mind and being loud and proud about their identities, and, But no, it's definitely, I look at like the youth now and what they have access to, and I'm like, damn, I'm jealous. Like, it's so awesome, like, to be able to, you know, at 13 years old, like, be on TikTok. And obviously there's like so many downsides to TikTok as well for young people. But I think the fact that you can, like, see another, like, a 14-year-old lesbian living their life in Iowa, you know what I mean? Like, you just can see real people, like, living their lives, and it's not like glamorized, I feel like, in the same way as we get on other platforms and stuff. It's just like more real, like realness and authenticity is valued, I think, a little bit more on TikTok, which, yeah, it's so cool for young queer people growing up right now.
I think that's like something that Sarah and I kind of talk about a lot too, is it's like, in a way, it's like, it's amazing that people have been able to find like a sense of community on TikTok, you know, if they don't have that community in real life. But to a certain degree, it also kind of makes this illusion that like everybody thinks the same way as you. And for like young queer people, reality might hit kind of hard. Like, unfortunately, there are certain times where it's like not everyone in the real world like agrees with that or with them or whatever. I mean, it might be kind of like a slap in the face for some people who just like haven't had those experiences yet. But I'm also curious, since putting out like your first single Explosions in 2015, which is about like falling in love with your best friend, I mean, I'm sure you've been able to see how these conversations around like gender and sexuality have grown like so much since then. Like, I just feel like where we are now, like the conversation around queerness is just like so far advanced from back then. So like, do you have any thoughts about like how this has evolved, or like do you remember what it felt like back then when you were putting out this song?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's incredible how much the conversation has evolved, especially around like intersectionality and gender. But yeah, back then I feel like it was so, there just wasn't that many people making, you know, even making songs like with she pronouns in it, like a girl singing about a girl, like in general. So I feel like anything was like in and of itself, that was like, felt like a big thing to do. But now it's like, you know, like I'll hear like a playlist on Spotify and like I'll hear a girl singing about a girl and like, oh my God, who's this artist? And I'll click on it. And there's nothing about her being like, that's not even part of her. You know, it's become so much more normalized, which is awesome. And yeah, I don't know. I'm excited about like where the conversation has gone. Obviously, it's gone so much deeper.
I feel like there's also that interesting thing of people can just use whatever pronouns, like they can tell their story through their songs without their whole image having to be their sexuality. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like, especially when you were coming up, there probably was more pressure for you to feel like you needed to step into those shoes where it's like, okay, like queer is going to be part of like my musician identity, rather than like some people who are making, who have like started making music over the past like 5 or so years, like they can just be queer in their songs without having to be like queer artists. Because that's the thing, is like, if you look back at any interview you've done since you started, like it's like the headline is always like queer singer. Mm-hmm. And like people don't need to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Like, yeah, no, I fully agree with that. It's like, now it's, if you're starting now, like that, it's just not, it's not even relevant really anymore. But when I started putting out music, like that definitely was always, it was always like, yeah, queer artist, lesbian artist, which I feel like a lot of other artists like would have been maybe bothered by, or some I've heard other like queer artists in the past, like, I don't need like that qualifier, like I'm just an artist period who happens to be queer, which totally understand that. But also at the time I was like, you know what, if this helps young queer people find my music, I'm okay with it. Yeah. Like, let them, let the press and stuff say that if they want to, if this like is gonna help somebody find my music.
I'm also just curious, like, since you have such kind of like an indie backstory to getting to where you are now, like if when you released that song at all, did you get any like Katy Perry, I Kissed a Girl like comparisons?
Oh, for Explosion? Yeah. Oh, no, not really. Yeah, because I think because I was like so outwardly queer already, no, I didn't know.
Okay. That's good to know. I mean, I'm always just curious because it's like for example, when we talked to Sizzy Rocket and she like had a song about like kissing her best friend, they were like, oh, like Katy Perry, like I kissed her, you know, it's like that always wanting to compare back to something that like was already famous, when it's like, no, this is not that, you know, this is my own thing.
Yeah, totally.
I feel like there's always that misconception when it comes to the media, which is another topic we discuss a lot, is like, especially in kind of like the early 2000s sort of time frame, the media just like to make everything salacious rather than kind of look into the truth of things. And we're kind of seeing now like the kids who grew up reading that media and be like questioning that media now taking over journalism and kind of asking better questions, or giving people the benefit of the doubt more often than not. And so I feel like we're kind of entering this nice little renaissance of media where you're way more likely to be spoken to by somebody who like respects your art and understands your art and isn't going to automatically just be like, oh, like they're bi curious, oh, they're this,
but
they're that
judgment on it. Yeah, definitely. And I feel like just everybody in general, like most people can have their own platform and a voice and an opinion now. So it's like, yeah, like if someone was to make a generalization like that, like it would be like, I feel like, I don't know, taken down so much quicker, or just like talked about in a different way, because everybody can like include their opinion now. you know, it's not just like the press stamping something and then like nobody can really say anything about it and you just like accept it.
And I think also just like talking about how artists don't necessarily need to like label themselves as like, oh, like I'm this lesbian pop star. Oh, I'm like a gay pop star or whatever the case is. In 2017, you did an interview with Out Magazine where you were talking about how like artists have this responsibility to be open with their listeners. And that like silence on these things, like when you're not using pronouns or like you're using just like heteronormative pronouns, like perpetuates like assumed heteronormativity because everybody is always like assumed straight until they're decide to tell people that they're not, no matter what the case may be. And I feel like that conversation at this point is kind of like like it's just like gone, like doesn't even matter anymore because so many people are like so much more comfortable and confident being open. But there is like this other side of the coin that because being part of the LGBTQ plus community has become so much more normalized and people are more comfortable in it, that you see these artists being lauded as gay icons or people who are part of the community like look to you and are like, oh my god, like you're everything. And like we literally tried to do like a survey of our listeners to find if there were other examples in Harry Styles, because I feel bad calling him out because I love him, but he's like the only clear example of somebody who's doing kind of like the bare minimum of just like running around with a flag and just openly having hetero relationships and then being like, my friends know what my true story is. And it's like, your true story is that you date the same looking women over and over again. So when it comes to this sort of idea of like people who are perceived or like outwardly read as like straight to like the general public, but are lauded as kind of like a gay icon, like, is it better that there is that added visibility and that added safety net, or is that just like another form of capitalist queerness?
God, that's such a hard question, because I definitely think, I think maybe I had a more strong position on it in like 2017. Yeah. And definitely my opinion has like shifted so much as like there's been so much more representation. I think it's important to have both. I really think like having musicians that are so, that like, I'm a lesbian and I'm proud of it and, you know, openly speak about it and use pronouns, especially in like pop music. There's still not that many, you know, huge mainstream pop songs that are like, you know, using pronouns like that. Like, I think it's so important to have that. But also, I don't think everybody should have to do that. Like, I think that if, you know, somebody's like, I just want to be an artist, period. And like, people can like come up with their own ideas of what I'm saying about, and that's for them to do. But like, I just, that I think that's fine too. I think that there's like really, there's space for both, for sure.
My thing with Harry, just using Harry as an example because he's the most obvious one we can pick apart, is like, my thing with him is that like, he's making a safe space at his concerts. And like, a lot of fans will use his concerts to like come out and like they'll hold signs and stuff like that. Be like, my mom's in like section 205, tell her I'm gay or whatever. And it's like, he's like taking the opportunity to like make it a safe and welcoming space. So to me, like at the end of the day, that's what's most important, is like, even though he doesn't really do a lot of activism outside of that, like his fans feel welcomed and his fans feel safe.
Absolutely. And that's like a good thing no matter what, obviously.
Definitely, because like that's the thing that's always so interesting with it, because like we critique Harry a lot just because we love him very much and like we try and be critical of everything that we love, just, you know, for funsies. But it's always that interesting thing where it's like a safe space is so much more important. And I feel like, again, it's that thing where these teenagers who are growing up in kind of like this TikTok era with their positivity feedback loops and all those things, like that's all they know. And so when we are critical of artists like this, they're kind of like, why are you being critical? Like, why are you questioning this? Like, it's a safe space. And it's like, well, because growing up, there have been artists who are like, oh, this is a safe space. And then it winds up not being a safe space because not all the fans have the same viewpoints. So I think, like you said, it's kind of like in 2017, you would have to have like stronger opinions. Whereas now it's kind of like, okay, you're not like, you don't have to think negatively of people for
wanting to keep that private or to just not have that be like their main identifier. It's so interesting. I think it's also like you were saying, like capitalism and queerness, and like, you know, some artists like also using it as like, obviously now it's like it's cool and it's like some artists will use it maybe. And I feel like I was talking about that once with my sister, and I feel like at the end of the day, even if that's happening, it's like visibility is still important. And like the visibility that will come from stuff is more important than maybe somebody like using queerness to make them cool.
Because most artists who the LGBTQ plus community like leans on or like views as a safe space, like even if they are kind of like leaning into it to get that capital gain or whatever, it's not in a bad way because they're not being bad people. You know what I mean? Because they could be like there have been artists in the past who kind of like take advantage of the fact that like young girls feel safe at their concerts or whatever the case is. But I feel like when it comes to this now, anybody can be a queer icon just based off of being like comfortable in their sexuality, so they don't feel weird wearing clothes that like quote unquote they're not supposed to or whatever the case is. There's way less fear around all of that and way less like assuming that they're doing it in like a nefarious way. Quite definitely. Nice.
Yeah, 100%.
So going on the lines of like telling your truth and like being authentically who you are and stuff, you've dedicated your music and all your music videos, your imagery, a lot to telling your personal story as a lesbian, but also being a feminist and fighting misogyny. And obviously on our podcast we do a lot of fighting misogyny ourselves, but sometimes when we release episodes or we release certain content, we're like a little bit anxious that somebody's gonna come at us and being like, you're not doing this right, or like you're not talking about this in the right way, or like you didn't talk about XYZ, like you're not really a feminist, all these things. So I'm curious, like as someone who's like an artist but also who is very public on TikTok, do you ever deal with that type of feeling of like people coming for you, or do you feel like it's more important just that people know you're doing your best basically?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Oh my God, it's like crippling sometimes. Yeah. Definitely. I feel that with like stuff going on in the world right now and with just like politics and yeah, just stuff that's been happening. It's been really hard, I feel like, for me to talk about, honestly, lately. And like it definitely, especially on TikTok, like there's always like people on TikTok are vicious. Mm-hmm. Like and people want to find anything they can to call out and to, you know, to like to feel important. And yeah, so it's definitely like on my mind a lot. And I generally end up posting, you know, stuff anyways, but it's definitely something that I think about.
Do you feel like, for example, with so much like political stuff going on, especially this summer, like do you feel a pressure to speak out about certain things?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I feel like huge pressure to speak out. But then I'm like, okay, like me posting this like notes from my notes app and then like posting a bunch of slides, is that really like the way that I can help the most, or is it actually like, you know, going out and doing something or just like donating and like telling, you know, I don't know. It's crippling sometimes to not knowing like what is the best thing and also not wanting to like be performative.
Yeah. I feel like, at least from my perspective, I mean, like, it's like a way different platform and like a way different situation, but it's just that thing of like, as a singular human, it's like, I personally would want to share like links and all that sort of stuff to be like, this is how you can help, because that's just like who I am and who I've been raised to be. And so it's like, when the Supreme Court announcement of like turning back Roe v. Wade came out, like straight away on our Name Three Songs account, like I went and just posted a bunch of stories with like resources, because I just was like, this is all I know how to do. And like for something like that where it affects actually me, I'm like, okay, this is something that nobody can really tell me I'm doing wrong, because I know like what to do. But I feel like in other scenarios, like when we've talked in the past, we've done episodes about like pop artists who do like blackfishing and music and like what that's like, and like all these sorts of things. And like, we make it very clear in our episodes, like, we're learning, and like, we're learning with you. Like, we're not here to be like, oh yes, we're doctorates in everything we talk about. Like, we are learning, and we want to do that learning with our listeners. And I feel like when it comes to doing stuff on TikTok, and like with you being so open about like who you are and just like comfortable and confident in that, like, you must have like that similar thing where like the people who want to get your content understand what's happening and like where you're coming from, and that like everybody's learning and nobody's perfect. But because TikTok is TikTok, like, other people will get fed your content and they'll just be like, you did this wrong. And it's like, why are you a better feminist or a better lesbian than I am? Like, that's what I don't understand.
Yeah. And it's the craziest thing is that, like, I feel like the energy that a lot of the like LGBTQ community spends on like attacking their own people, or like picking apart like the way their peers are doing things, is like so much more than, like, let's put our energy to where like the actual bad guys are. Obviously, like, we should, you know, call each other out on important things and in a kind way, and teach each other things. But
with you saying like teach people kindly, I feel like that's so important. Yeah. And sometimes you do have people in the comments who are trying to do that, which can be quite nice. And you can have like a very like symbiotic relationship through that, and like learn something and both sort of teach each other your own ways. And so, I mean, like, for you, have you had those experiences where somebody's nicely been like, hey, there's actual other information that like you might want to know if you're going to be like this person on the internet?
Ooh, I mean, maybe sometimes, like, kind of remember when I used this, there was a sound that I think it was like wasn't for me, like it was for, I think, a lot of like white creators started using it, and it was definitely like for black creators. And somebody, like, I think a few people were like kindly saying to me that, and I was like, oh my god, getting it down, like, not for me. More recently, I had an interesting thing happen, which I haven't really talked about, but it was, I posted this like 3 years ago on TikTok, and then I talked about it again, and this, for some reason this time, it kind of like blew up and people saw like an issue with it. But I like showed a picture that I took in high school. I was 16 when I took this picture. It was like now, like 10 years ago. So my high school photography teacher asked me to take a picture of two guys in a car because I was like only taking pictures of women, and he was like, I want you to take a picture of two guys in a car. And like, he expected like some kind of like Abercrombie, whatever, style picture. So I took a picture of the high school quarterback, and I dressed him in drag. And then I wrapped my ex-boyfriend in cellophane, and I like put them in the car with garden shears. So recently when I reposted that picture, a lot of people were coming for me and saying that it was transphobic because I was like depicting the quarterback as, I don't, people like perceived it as like he was like a killer. And I'm like, I never said anywhere he was trans, first of all. Yeah. It's like, I addressed the quarterback in drag. I like very clearly say that. And then also, I don't know, it was up to interpretation, but I totally understand that people are talking a lot about that documentary Disclosure, which I still haven't seen, but I'm gonna watch. And yeah, I think in that moment, I was like, damn, like, I took this picture when I was 16 years old, and it was like, but I get it. It's like, I'm not gonna argue with, you know, if a trans person is saying to me that this is like a harmful stereotype, I took it down. Yeah, I took the video down, obviously. So I'm like, I don't want to continue with something that's like a harmful stereotype.
And I feel like that's one of those things where it's like 10 years ago, the literature and the information and like the context that we had for that was so like basically non-existent. And so it is that thing where it's like, now you have the opportunity to learn. And if people want to and can like educate kindly, which a lot of people do, especially when it comes to topics like that, where it's like, clearly it was a different time, whatever the case is, like, there was less education, less access to education about that. Like, it's one of those things where you come away learning something and realizing like, oh shit, like, there's this whole world or this whole idea that I just was completely unaware of.
No, it's definitely enlightening, for sure.
So I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and I'm really interested to hear your opinions on this, getting into the male and female gaze of it all. But female pop stars have historically been very over-sexualized, historically very objectified in the spotlight, and a lot of this objectification comes from a very heavy male gaze, what's like traditionally seen as sexy and what's traditionally seen as feminine. But then yourself making art like from the female gaze, but also being very like femme presenting and being very confident. Do you ever feel like you've had to deal with men kind of deciding that your art is for them and they like end up fetishizing it at all?
Okay, surprisingly, not real. Like not that sticks out in my mind. And maybe it's because I have like filtered YouTube comments on and I like filter out any words that I don't want to see and stuff. But generally, yeah, of course, there'll be sometimes I'll see like a comment come through. I feel like generally my work has found the right audience, which I'm very, very grateful for.
Honestly, like maybe to your credit, your storytelling has been so on point from the very beginning that like your audience found you in the very beginning and it was never like misconstrued.
Yeah. Yes, totally. And I think it is maybe like that storytelling. It's not like for shock value. Like,
yeah.
Obviously there are there are very sexy scenes in my music videos, but like they are in context of like a larger story. And it's not just, you know, Can't Remember to Forget You by Rihanna and Shakira, where they're just like grinding each other the whole day. Yeah. You know, I'm not like making videos like that. So I feel like that can easily find, obviously, like male gaze kind of audience. But yeah, I feel like maybe it's because of the larger stories. But no, and I have my DP is a woman, and most of my team is all queer and female, and I think that also just helps so much with like depicting things the way that I want, and then like also them being received.
Yeah, I imagine that has like a huge impact, because like honestly, you're kind of like the first person that we've talked to who's said these types of things, because so many people, if they came up through like the proper industry side, like it was always men trying to control something, or like too many people trying to be like, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. But also just like telling your own story from your perspective is so important. And I think you've even said this in an interview before, but it's like a straight man telling a lesbian love story is not the same thing.
No, not the same thing. And I've always said that, like, to me, the biggest difference just in, like, shot composition that you can tell, like, if a lesbian directs a sex scene, not always, but I feel like a female gaze kind of sex scene versus a, like, super male gaze lesbian sex scene, generally the ones from the male gaze are, like, a lot of wide shots for your, like, literally, it's almost like a science. It's like, looks like it's like a diagram, you know what I mean? Just like really wide. And I feel like with my music videos, what I've tried to do is just a lot more like close-ups, nuances, kind of like the feeling that it feels like to, you know, the feeling of being with a woman. Like, how do I depict that and not make it just like this like sexualized, like you're scissoring for, you know.
I love you saying this, because we also did a podcast episode about the female gaze and the male gaze and like how they're utilized in music and the music industry, etc., and how this like very filmy trope correlates to real life and music and so many other things, and how kind of like the male gaze is very heterosexual, straight male viewpoint of things. It's very just like the letter A. And then the female gaze is like B through Z, and it can be anything, and it's very like flowy and has layers and has like all this stuff to it. And it's about like light and composition and art and like all this stuff. And like, because the male gaze is so straightforward and it's always the same thing. Whereas like the female gaze, if you read essays about it or you watch YouTube videos about it or whatever the case is, there's always different things depending on who's talking about it. And I feel like what you were saying and what Jenna was saying about your body of work, it's like so clearly just like not for men, that even if men were like going out of their way to try and find some sort of like lesbian content to be like, ah, yes, the girls are being lesbians for us, like there's no way to watch anything that you've created and be like, obviously I'm not a straight man, but like but there would be no way. I could not imagine a straight man being like, ah, yes, lesbians are for me. Like, there's no way.
No, fully. That's, no, so accurate. I love that thing you just said about the male gaze being A and the female gaze B through Z. I'm going to start saying that, using that. That's
amazing.
Please do. I feel like it's so important to realize like how many variables there are to the female gaze, and that like there can be different things for different people. And because I feel like a lot of people also are like, oh, it's like can be a very like women loving women thing, and it's like, yeah, but there's also ways to view men through the female gaze, and like that's possible too.
100%. Definitely.
It's so incredible to like watch when female creators get to actually like direct their own work and have all of the creative control behind these things, because you can like really tell the difference between like a woman telling her story in like even in a film format specifically. And so it's just really awesome like how much of a hand you have in like your creative process, and you're able to tell kind of like not just from the lyrics and the music of your songs, but from the imagery of your songs and like the way you promote them, the story has so much more meaning to it.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Being able to like, craft my own story, like and tell it authentically, and like I don't take it for granted, that's for sure. And it's definitely awesome to like, even now, you know, now I have like a whole team around me for the first time since I started, which is so awesome. But I have created a team around me that's pretty much almost all queer and a lot of ladies, and everybody wants to help me tell the stories that I've already been telling and just like help magnify it. And no one's telling me like that it's, you know, telling me to change it at all, which is so awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. I'm also curious, like, with you having gone to, like, film school, do you feel like you learned any of this in college? I mean, I don't know if they really, like, covered, like, male versus female gaze, but, like, but because it's so, like, prevalent within cinematography, so I'm curious if that was something that was ever taught, or you kind of, like, learned it on your own, or, like, maybe from your friends, or, like, doing your own productions.
So, honestly, I did not take, like, the easy out gen ed classes. I would, like, scour all of the schools to find like the best one, like the most interesting ones. And I had a specific gen ed class that was like in the master's program, but if you were like a senior, you could take it. And it was called Female Cultural Rebels in the Modern Times.
Awesome.
Such a good class. Sounds badass.
And it was so sick. And it was with this performance artist named Karen Finley. And I feel like a lot of that, like I learned from
that's
her.
Amazing.
Yeah. I honestly did learn a lot of useful stuff at NYU. I feel like, and I did a lot of like gender studies classes too, and like geopolitics of beauty. And I definitely made sure to, you know, on the other like half of my schedule was filled up with like the technical film stuff. And then the other half I filled up with all of that kind of stuff.
Cool.
Liberal arts education.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like it's one of those things that people don't like, not necessarily like think about like when they're in school or like when they have the opportunity, and then later on in life, they're like, oh wow, like this class that I took actually really like shaped my brain into like what I learned about. And you don't really realize until like years later, because at the time you're just like, oh yeah, I'm the cool kid taking this cool class. Like, look at me. and then like, as you grow up, you're like, oh wow, like I really learned a lot and it helped shape me and my career or whatever the case is.
Oh my God, absolutely. I miss school so much, and I would love to go back at some point for something.
Definitely. We just like our podcast is just like, we have a master's now in like gender studies just from doing this podcast.
Yes.
Because like it's so much reading, like.
But there was one point that you just said, so just to like go back a little bit really quick, and you saying how like you've had a really supportive like team around you, and how you hadn't been like you didn't sign on to any record deals or just distribution deals or anything until like very recently. And like obviously there's like lots of horror stories about young girls who want to do pop music sort of entering the industry without any knowledge of how the industry works, getting trapped in deals, like getting forced to be an artist that they don't want to be, lots of just like nonsense garbage. And so my question is like, since from the start of your career, like you kind of started with a viral moment and you've had multiple viral moments like with the type of music that you're doing, like have you ever had people who have tried to get involved like in the Zolita project who kind of act like they understand your vision and your story, but then when you've even kind of tried to give it a go, but like felt like they were trying to control the narrative and kind of push you into like that pop star glass box that everybody wants to put pretty girls into who write pop music?
I had a straight white cis male manager for years, and I do now, but I have a lesbian day-to-day manager, so like that's how I could, you know, that's how I made that work in my head. I have both, but this particular one that I had had for years, I feel like actually he almost, it was like the way that he would talk about me in meetings and stuff, oh like, yeah, this is my lesbian artist, like it just, I don't feel like represented well by him. I don't want you even talking about me. But I feel like other than that, like my whole entire, well, just like, you know, collaborators that I had around me were like people that I just had handpicked. So I didn't like deal with that until last year. So when I had the viral moment with somebody I fucked once, which with all the other like previous viral moments, they just had never really translated did the same, like, over to Spotify. Like, the videos always did well, but it didn't necessarily translate to Spotify. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this was the first time that I saw it really... I mean, it was just, like, a viral moment on such a larger scale than I had ever experienced. And it was, you know, also with TikTok and Spotify. And so I had that moment that everybody always talked about. They're like, okay, you have your viral moment, and every single label's gonna reach out to you. And it was that, like, you know, then those 2 days, like, every single label I've ever been like, oh, my God, I like that's my dream. Like, they all reached out all at once.
Oh, wow.
And I, at that point, like, didn't have my manager anymore. I was, like, fully solo. And I took, like, all these meetings back to back to back with, like, all these A&Rs and, like, went to dinners and did that whole thing.
Yeah.
And everybody is so, I'm so happy that this happened when I'm, like, at this time of my life and when I've already been in the industry for a good amount of time. Because if I was younger and that happened to me, holy shit, I would have, like, gone with the first thing that, you know, or I would have just, like, the offers are so sparkly and, like, everything people are selling, you're like, we want you to have creative and we, like, really, like, oh my God, we see so much for this project, blah, 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 like, we want to do this and that, and that, you know, the advances, like, the number, obviously the money number always sounds nice, and, like, I'm really happy I took my sweet, sweet time with, like, deciding and figuring out what I wanted to do. And there's just, like, so many stories recently, I feel like, with especially people who have TikTok moments, who sign, like, these big major deals, and, like, the minute the second follow-up single, like, doesn't do a certain amount of streams that they wanted to do, like, you're canned, and then you can't, like, release it. And I also have just, like, I've done everything myself for so long that I was like, I can't imagine not having, like, I want to have my hand in all of these things still. Yeah, so I took my time deciding. I got a lawyer first.
Good job. And,
that was the, I was like, I just, I'll decide on my lawyer and then I'll do the other stuff. And then I signed with AWOL, which I'm so stoked about because it's technically still independent. Yeah. Everything, I decide everything, but I have an awesome, it's their label. So it's under Sony, but I own my masters and I have an awesome team of women and queer people around me. That was the other thing is like of all the meetings I took, it was the only meeting that had a woman and a POC person in it. Like all the other ones were all like white cis straight men.
Jesus.
So immediately I was
very
like,
telling.
That's jarring.
I was like, I was like, I like it here. Like, immediately was like, this is good. It's been such an awesome experience because it's just like, I get to do what I'm doing or what I was already doing before, just with a little bit more support around me. And so that's been exciting.
No, that's incredible.
Just for like listeners who may not be as familiar with like how AWOL works, can you like give a brief background? Like, I know you mentioned like you have 100% of your masters, but like, how does it work other than that? Like, is your team or are there people from AWOL who are like on your team now? Or like, how is that all that laid out?
Yeah. So basically AWOL is a distro company, like first and foremost. And at the lowest, like anybody can distribute their music through AWOL. But then they started doing like different tiers basically. And so the middle tier AWOL Plus, they can give you like $20,000 and $40,000, but you're technically not signed with them. But it's just like a little advance basically if they like, you know, believe in the project. And then AWOL Recordings is the higher level, and that's like the record label. And also, I'm not sure if that happened after they got bought by Sony or before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but basically it's a licensing deal. Like any deal that you do with like AWOL is a licensing deal. So they don't own your masters. Like you basically license out your masters for 5 years. And then after those 5 years or whatever amount of years you decide with them, after that, they're yours, like fully yours again. So yeah, that was like a huge, hugely important thing to me. And the other big thing is like, you know, obviously it's a give and take, right? For an artist like me, like who wants to like be doing all my own creative, all my videos, like they're a dream because they're like supportive in the way that I need them to be.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of like having like a principal to go into, like a principal's office to go into, where it's like, okay, they know how this works. They know how this runs. Like they can help me. And I feel like in a way, because like we've talked also, like we've done an episode about kind of like record label deals, how they all work, like how there have been artists like Sky Ferry and Ray and artists like that who have gotten trapped in really bad label deals and like all that sort of horror story sort of stuff. Because I think we talked about AWOL and I think it was Cobalt too who like do something similar.
Yeah, so Cobalt used to own AWOL.
And so we talked about how like this looks like something that could be like a really positive future for the music industry because it's like, it's kind of more like they're being more transparent about the fact that like we're giving you a loan and like we believe in you and it's kind of feels a bit more comfortable getting like a loan from music industry because they can like help you more than like a bit like a bank's not gonna know how things work or like have those connections or be able to help you network or whatever the case may be. And so it's kind of like it's nice that the industry, at least some people in the industry, realized it was broken and that there could be a way to fix this where artists in the industry once again have like a more comfortable and like confident relationship with each other.
100%. And it's so cool that like a lot of, mostly everyone who works at AWOL now all came from major labels, and they all know how fucked major labels are to the artists and like, and also to like, they're to the workers. Like my two of my main girls at AWOL, they're like, I literally was like, just it like was sick. Like it was, it makes the environment there is just like, is not good. Obviously it's not everybody's experience. That's not everybody's experience. And like, but I think with major labels, it's like the 1%, like the top 1% of their artists, that's where mostly everybody's focus are. And then the other 99% get like fucked over.
Yeah.
So if you're in the top 1%, it's awesome. Yeah, it's going to work so for great. You, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel very, very lucky with my new team there. And my management that I signed with also, they specialize in independent.
That's amazing.
In repping independent artists. And they, like, they used to manage Love, which he was one of AWOL's biggest poster child. So in tandem, they all work together really nicely.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. And, like, the one other thing that you mentioned with kind of, like, the whole TikTok thing and these artists and because, like, we also have talked about how, like, TikTok's kind of created its own sort of music industry in a way because, like, the listeners know what they like and they know what they want and they can make things go viral and all this stuff. And so there's, like, a lot of conversation going on there. So the interesting thing that you mentioned that I just wanted to, like, touch on is the fact that, like, because you had, like, years of experience doing music prior to agreeing to like this distro deal with AWOL, and that like you weren't just like fresh off the boat, like fresh into the music industry world, like you had time living in LA, you had time living in New York, like you kind of got to experience life a bit, you wound up getting a better deal and you wound up kind of being able to have the control that you want. And yet there are these younger artists or like artists who aren't from major cities or who have less knowledge or whatever the case is, like having songs go viral, getting picked up, and then just if the next one doesn't do well, because we do live in this world right now where numbers mean more than anything. And so I guess like just from your perspective of somebody who's kind of been there, done that, like figured it out, like what would be like your most important piece of advice to like these younger artists who are trying to utilize the power that TikTok gives them and then kind of get too excited by the labels calling and taking them to Nobu or whatever the case is, and then being like, let's sign something right now. I'm promising you the world. Like, what do you think that is important to like watch out for in that regard?
Yeah, I guess like take your time with it, like maintain your independence as long as you can. And I think for like indie artists that are having a big viral moment, there's other things now out there. Like there's something called Indify, which basically like in random, just like investors will, like if a song's going viral, they'll be like, okay, like for a little piece of it, like I'm going to give you $20,000 to like for marketing stuff to like help it really go viral. And then your deal will end up being so much better with whatever major that you end up, you know, if you want to end up going that route. There are like other tools at your disposal. I think just biggest piece of advice, like follow your intuition, like take every single call and like draw out the process and like see if people really want you, you know what I mean? Because don't be rushed to make a decision, because if somebody is forcing you to sign, you know what I mean? Be like, oh, you have to sign now. Like clearly like they don't have a vision for your future as an artist. They like just want, you know, what's happening right now. So I think don't be afraid of taking your time. It's not going to go away. I think that was something that I was so scared of. I was like, I feel like this is all gonna like magically like just go away. It's like it's only here now and I have to do something else. It's gonna like disappear overnight, and it's not going to. Like the people who see the long-term longevity of your project are not going away.
It's very scarcity mentality. It's like, well, if I don't sign this contract, they're just gonna go find someone else, and then I'll miss my opportunity.
And you know what, maybe they will, like they that person, maybe they will find their other viral person, and then they're gonna can them. Like it's the people that are gonna run away to the next viral moment are not the people that you want to be to anyway.
Yeah,
you
know, absolutely.
Yeah, the TikTok is good for the music industry, bad for the music industry. It's all the things. What's super interesting is the distribution that TikTok does, is distribution deals now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they can like boost their songs that they want to boost, you know?
That's crazy.
Because they have like it's getting like too much.
Every time you think you've beaten like the main villain of the music industry story, like something else shows up that you're like, is this good or is this Thanos? Like, I don't know.
It's Literally. And like, it's, if I don't know, if like them doing that to me feels like it's going to ruin the magic of the viral moment on TikTok. It's like, it's so fun when it's like not planned and it's like, oh, people actually chose it. People want this, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not being shoved down their throat.
And I wonder with like that, if it would fall under the same sort of guidelines of like where influencers have to be like hashtag ad or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
Like
if it would be,
like if it would be something that would have to be more transparent with, like if it's something that TikTok is pushing, or if they're like allowed to not show that.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely don't now. So that probably will be a future conversation.
Yeah, interesting. So to like end things off on a more like celebratory of your creative vision sort of thing, I did just want to touch on like your recent trilogy of music videos, because I think like what you did there in not only the songwriting, but obviously like the creative direction and all that with the videos is really incredible, because you gave a lot of queer women the like ultimate Y2K rom-com love story to enjoy, which like a lot of us who grew up in like that heyday of rom-coms, like you never got to experience that. Like, so we're so lucky now that we have a lot more like of the queer sort of love stories in media, and that's like not so much of something that you shy away from, or like you have to find like the right TV channel to watch it on. Because like growing up in those rom-coms that were big deals, like if there were gay characters, like they were always like the butt of a joke, or like this random side character, or somebody like in Clueless, like that the girl's like pining over, and then like, oh no, he's gay, and it ruins their whole life. And now when we do like find these stories, they kind of become part of like the quilt of like the queer journey of trying to figure things out. And it's like, okay, like this is like a handbook that I can hand off to like my new young queer friend to like watch all of this media, whatever. And so when you think about this body of work, like in 5 to 10 years from now, and like think about the future and all this sort of stuff, I mean, like personally, like I feel like this will be something that people can go back to and like show their friends and be like, look at what we got during this time. Like when we could have had something else. Like, was there like a thought process behind like not only what this means now, but like what could this mean in the future as well?
Definitely. I mean, there wasn't that thought process so much when I was making it. I think whenever I'm making something, it's just because I'm like, oh my God, I'm so excited about this idea. I need to make it, just like creatively. And then when it's always when I see the responses, you know, and like when I put up the first one, which just came from a place of like me being like, I want to make something nostalgic and like that references the rom-coms that I love, but make it gay and just like, and have something just like so fun and something that, just something that I would have wanted. And then after I made that and saw the way that people reacted to it, then definitely there was more thought when I was making Single in September and I Fucking Love You, because I knew like what that story meant to people already, and like how it was like helping some people with their like sexual awakenings and like coming into their queerness and their identities. So there was a little bit more thought that went into the following too. But when I think about it now, and I think about like how many, I feel like there's just, especially like on TikTok and on YouTube, like how many people have said that was like watching that video like was an awakening for them.
That's so special.
It's definitely exciting to think about. It's so special. And I don't, sometimes it's like when you see those comments like a lot, it's hard to like have them sink in the same way. So sometimes when I'm like doubting myself and stuff, I'm like, I'll go read some comments. I'm like, okay, like let that one comment, like that girl, let that sink in. Like that's important. Like you're, you know, to make art that's like helping people feel comfy in themselves is like such a gift. I remind myself of that.
Oh, that's amazing. I feel like the most special part of all of it is it's kind of like the first two videos are very much kind of like a normal sort of high school thing of like, oh, like you're leaving high school, like you're probably gonna have to break up, and like that conversation that a lot of people go through. And so getting to view that from like the queer perspective rather than just like the hetero perspective, I think was really special. But also in the last video, like them finding each other when they're older and like realizing like, oh, like this was meant to be, like all that sort of stuff is really incredible, because we have had the issue in media where now that like gay people are allowed to be in media, there's a lot of like fridging the gays or like killing someone off or whatever the case is, where like you never get the happy ending. Sorry, this is gonna Jenna's laughing because this always winds up in me going down a rabbit hole about the TV show The Magicians from Sci-Fi Channel. But there is like a lot of that issue where they kind of give you that like little payoff where it's like, here's your gay little treat, but now we're gonna kill them. And so the fact that like there's actually a happy ending is like very incredible and like very needed.
Yeah, that was so important to me. Like, I've talked about this like so extensively. I wrote an op-ed for the Daily Beast, and I talked about this a lot. But just like, I feel like, especially for like woman-loving women, like sapphic media, it's like it always like falls under the categories of like period piece or traumatic coming out stories or someone gets killed, like a killing your gaze trope. And yeah, so I feel like it was just so important to me to tell a happy ending story. We just need it so badly.
Yeah, it's very incredible and like definitely very necessary. And I think like looking through like comments when you were posting the stuff on TikTok, it was just like so nice to see kind of like the collective joy of like actually getting that, because like the story could have gone in so many directions, like after the high school breakup, where like it could have just been like you being successful and like having a new relationship or whatever the case is, but having that kind of very rom-com-y like meet cute redo sort of situation and like it ended happy is like so incredible.
Yeah, and it was such a fun, like, obviously we referenced so many like high school kind of rom-com rom-coms and rom-com tropes in the first two, and then for the third one to be like, okay, like, get to look at more adult rom-coms and like Notting Hill and stuff like that, that was really super fun. But and also I almost, when I was making the third one, like my in my personal life, my first love, like that situation had kind of fallen apart, and I think because I was like in that headspace, I was like, for the third video, I was like, they're like back together, and they like, you know, they fall apart, and it's like high school love doesn't last, like people need to know that, like it was
being realistic.
I was like, yeah, like a realistic, like, oh, lesbians like try and make it last forever. Like, it's so, like, they never want to break up. And, like, but sometimes you need to know it's, like, when to call it quits. Like, literally, that's, like, that's where my personal life, that was where my head was at. And I was literally writing, I was in, like, a ton of sessions, like, trying to shoot for what that third song would be. And I was writing sad shit. Like, the song that I almost chose is called Sadly in Love. And it was, like, falling sadly in love. And and then I was, like, had, a, you know, a huge moment of, like, wait, what the fuck are you doing? Like, no, people don't want to see that right now. Like, nobody wants that. Like,
yeah, give them the idealistic version.
That's so sad.
Let them have this one thing. Crush them in the next music video.
Yes, exactly. And also then I was like, I actually like fell super in love with my girlfriend now. So I was like at the same time of like that, you know, first love, like, you know, thing falling apart. I like had this new love experience. And I think that I was able to infuse that energy into, you know, the feeling of the third video.
Oh my god, I just the scrapped ideas killed the gays. Like, and then I realized I couldn't do that.
No, literally. I'm like, thank god, everyone would have killed me. I would have been murdered for that.
Well, I think we're very excited to see like what you continue to do and the stories you tell in your upcoming music videos as well. So I want to give a big thank you, Zilita, for joining us today. And for all of our listeners, we'll have all of the links in the description below so you can find out more and become Zilita's number one fan. So yes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys so much for the amazing conversation. This was so fun.
Yay. We loved it too.
I love a good positive conversation.
I know, right? It's a rarity for us.
It's so nice. Like, obviously, Zilita shared some mishaps, but I feel like for a queer pop star, her career's been like pretty smooth sailing. She got away easy somehow, and I'm so excited for her for it.
Which also is just proof that if you surround yourself with the right people, people are going to believe in you and want to also support you.
Yeah, exactly. It's so important. And I feel like that's something that we reiterate so much in so many of our like more educational episodes, of just like people just trusting the wrong people and therefore just the world imploding around them. So it's just so incredible that she was able to surround herself with such incredible people who like saw her vision and saw what she was doing and like believed in her, even with the whole world being a mess at all times. Was there a favorite part of this interview for you?
I loved that she hadn't had to deal with the male gaze very much.
Yeah.
Which like has a lot to do with the community and like, as she said, maybe sometimes a bubble. But I thought there would have been something where she felt like somebody was judging her or like objectifying her or something. So I'm actually really surprised about that.
Yeah, no, that was definitely like one of the parts that I found the most interesting from this conversation too, because especially with TikTok, like we were saying, it's like the fact that people just kind of realized it wasn't for them somehow is just like so incredible, because I feel like even from like the videos I post on our TikTok always wind up on somebody's pages trying to start a fight with me for no good reason. Like, at least when people are fighting in our comments, they're just like, I actually know more about queerness than you. Like, for me, they're like, actually, Calvin Harris was famous before Taylor Swift. I'm like, how did you find this?
But also just goes to show that Zolita has been so on brand from the very beginning that no one was ever going to misconstrue her.
Yeah, which is so incredible. So we really hope you guys enjoyed this conversation and that you enjoyed this different perspective on like very similar topics that we talk about all the time. Because again, it's just like, it's so nice to hear of a more like positive journey through the music industry, because so often so many people wind up just like, even if they feel like they're doing the right thing, there's still that stupid glass box that they love to shove women into in the music industry. So it's just incredible that she got to avoid that. So if you guys have any thoughts or feelings about this episode, we would love to hear them. You can chat with us on social media. We are at Name3Songs on all platforms. Or if you'd like to talk to us about any of the topics we discussed today personally, you can find us. I am at Sarah_Fagan on Instagram and Twitter, and Jenna is at Jenna_Million. So thanks for joining us on this fun bonus interview episode of Name3Songs. And until next time, never let anyone make you feel bad about your favorite band.
And remember, you're never too cool to listen to Zolita.
Don't forget to subscribe to be notified when each episode comes out and leave us a 5-star review. They really help.
If you want to find out more about Zolita, listen to her music, or give her a follow, you can do so in the description below or at our website at Name3Songs.com.